Accession number 22688, reel 5.
Enid Grant, reel 5. You were saying you had INSA at TAMU as well.
Yes, they came down once. We were all told they were coming, and we were on duty and sitting. I was sitting in a tent with the lights on. The troops were going about looking to see where it was going to be held, and they came in and asked me if I was one of the performers. I was sitting under a light. I don't remember much about it. It was a nice entertainment, a nice evening.
Do you remember anyone else who could? Did you ever see Gert and Daisy?
Not there, no.
Noel Coward?
No, no. Don't think so. I might have done. We saw so much that it's difficult to remember it all.
Yes, it seems from what you're saying there was quite a lot of social
activity. Oh, yes, we made it social. Every evening there was a party somewhere. You'd come off duty exhausted, and we were expected to go out and dance to keep the troops amused, and somebody'd come along in a jeep. I came one night and took us to Kohima, which was 100 miles away. We had a lovely party, and they brought us back in the early hours of the morning, and then you were up and on duty again early in the morning, so it went on.
What was Kohima like? You know, what was your impression of the place?
My what?
What was your impression of Kohima? I know you were only there briefly.
Well, very little, because I just went to a party and it was dark when we got there. It was long after all that battle. And we had, I think I told you, we had an officer's mess in Imphal. We used to go and meet people and dance. We could get bacon and eggs. And there was one man called Harry, I think. He had a special place at the bar. He always used to come in and fall asleep with his head on the bar. And it was always rather dangerous if you went in a jeep. You were advised to take the rotor arm out, because if you didn't, somebody'd pinch it while you were in there. And I remember the Wasbys there. That's all I remember about
in
that.
In TAMU?
No, this is Imphal. I've gone back to Imphal, I'm afraid. The officers' club at Imphal.
What were the Wasbys doing there? Were they mobile or static?
Yes, I think they brought their tea and sandwiches there. I have a vague memory of it. My most vivid memories when we went behind the Japanese lines and found them there.
Did Mountbatten ever come to your area?
I don't remember him. He must have done. I mean, he was all over.
You never saw him?
Not there. I don't remember seeing him there. I saw him in Burma Star reunion at London. You know, he used to come there and we used to parade.
How about Edwina? Did she ever appear? Who? Edwina Mountbatten, his
wife?
Yes,
she did. I don't think I saw. She came to Kenya. I remember her coming to Kenya. I worked at the War Memorial Hospital in Nakuru, and I think she paid us a visit, as far as I remember. I hope I'm not getting them mixed up.
Well, it's rather difficult, I would imagine, with such a rich experience. So, from TAMU, is there anything else you could tell me about TAMU?
Oh,
I was wondering about the troops there. Was there a lot of... This would have been, I imagine, very much the time of the advance in Burma,
yes,
would
it was,
not?
The pre,
yes,
what
the Japanese were being pushed back.
We had African troops, British and Indian, there, and it was a smaller hospital, 500 beds, 89 Indian General Hospital combined, it was called, as far as I can remember. It was very interesting down there. The whole place had been mined for this previous battle. I suppose that's why it was called the Valley of Death. And they'd cleared the mines to a certain extent to accommodate the hospital, but it wasn't safe to go off the premises. And of course, the locals couldn't be made to understand this, and they kept coming in with hands blown off and legs blown off, and our surgeons would have to operate on them. And our operating theatre was two EPIP tents, which means European pattern, Indian pattern. About the size of this room, I suppose, and they were lashed together to make a big tent, and that was the operating theatre. But it rained and rained and rained in Tamu, and the water used to get in between the where the two tents were lashed at the top and make a sort of balloon, and it used to sink lower and lower over the surgeons as they were operating. And an orderly was permanently kept standing with a pole to heave the water out as it came in. It was all very primitive. We had oil lanterns to light the place, and we used to give the anaesthetic in the old-fashioned way on a pad of just over ether, you know. It all seemed to work all right. I mean, we didn't have any fancy. Not that I remember there, anyway. And in the morning, we had a padre up at Imphal. He was very nice. I met him quite often. He was very used to tell me all his troubles. He was very perturbed because his wife had gone off with one of the American soldiers in London. He was very unhappy. He had to do all the burials, and it was an immense task for him. He couldn't come down to Tamu. So in the morning, there's nearly always somebody dead every day. We'd collect all their identity discs so we could write to their families to tell them. And we'd stitch them into red blankets. And the prior evening, the orderlies had been sent to dig graves in amongst the teak trees in a safe place where there were no mines already. So in the morning, the procession used to set off Matron Kelly in front, or the stretcher bearers carrying the dead in their red blankets down to the burial field. And they were all very reverently buried in these graves. They were Muslims, they were Hindus, they were Irish, they were Catholics, they were Church of England, whatever they were all buried in there. And Matron Kelly stood in the middle and read from the Book of Common Prayer, the burial service, over the lot of them. And a lot of people worry about the dead whom they never found again, and I would say to them that they're all were reverently buried in a very beautiful place. It couldn't have been better. The lovely teak trees, lovely bright coloured birds and butterflies flying about, and I know many people never found the bodies of their loved ones, but certainly there they were properly buried, and they could have happy memories of them. Of course, in the middle of battle, I'm afraid they were just left on the roadside. They couldn't take them. They just had to leave them where they were, where the dead people were, and, you know, in the jungle. Yes. So.
Yes, that must be, you know, I hope people hear this, because it must be a great comfort.
I wouldn't mind being buried there. It was beautiful. I mean,
yes, it must have been a lovely area.
Yes, it was.
It?
I mean, we had mines all round. The other thing was, I think I told you we had our tents. There were only four of us and Matron along the river. And we used to sit out at night. You had to be buttoned up against mosquitoes, and you had bicycle clips or a bit of string round your trouser legs, otherwise the scorpions climbed up. We used to sit out there with my gramophone and in this teak forest, most strange, really. We'd play all the old tunes of Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies and Rachmaninoff and Max Miller. I've forgotten them now, all the popular tunes of that time. And the river went just along the bottom, and they used to fish at night, the locals. You'd see the river, the boat coming down the river, and they used to have a lighted thing in front, a flare to show the way, and they used to spear the fish, I think they used to fish, and they all used to stop and listen to the music. They loved it, and they sort of waved to you. I don't have any memories of rancor, not really. I suppose there must have been some, but I didn't think I came across. Oh, the cookhouse, yes, there was one incident in Tamu. I was in my ward and I heard an awful lot of noise coming from the cookhouse. So I went to the door of the tent and looked out. And there was an African askari and an Indian cook having an argument. And this friend of mine who was posted with me everywhere, she was very tiny. She looked really like about a 12-year-old girl. And She had a uniform on, and I think, anyway, I don't think we, yes, we put trousers on in the evening. We had the khaki dress and a khaki veil, and I saw this small figure marching. She was a lieutenant, down to the cookhouse, and she drew herself up. She said, "Stop that noise at once and go back to bed." She says, "What is the matter?" And what had happened was the quartermaster went round the villages to get chickens and anything he could, and you could never get enough for the whole hospital. So one day the British troops had it, and the next day the Indian troops, and the next the Africans. And the African and was disputing. He said it was their turn for chicken, and the cook was saying, "No, it's the Indians' turn." There's a real row developing. Anyway, it was quelled at once. That's one thing about the army. They obeyed orders, even if it came from a little sister. She was a tiny little thing.
What was her name?
Coral Shooty.
Coral Shooty.
S-H-U-T-I-E.
S-U-T-I-E.
S-H-U-T-I-E. Coral Shooty. She's now nearly blind. She's in Peshawar. She married an Indian doctor, a surgeon, and she's out there. I haven't heard from her lately. I had a card at Christmas.
So after Tamu, is this when you went on to Rangoon?
Yes. There's just one or two more incidents. We were taken, again, recreation for us meant if your friends were in the remount depot, you went and rode their horses. If they were in the mechanical division, REME, they took you out and taught you to drive jeeps and trucks and anything, weapons carriers. And on one occasion, there was a party on. This was Imphal. I'm going back to Imphal. And the friend who collected me was driving a weapons carrier, and he was picking up one or two people, and he said, "Would you like to drive?" So I said, "Yes, I'd love to." So I drove the weapons carrier to the party, and as we arrived, an MP, military policeman, stepped forward, and this was something new in our lives. We hadn't had them before. And he said, are you authorised to drive this vehicle?" There's a rather toffee-nosed voice. I said, "No, I'm not." Well, he said, "Where's your licence?" He said, "You go and see the colonel in his office in the morning." So the colonel, who realised what the situation was and that told him that the young ladies had to be kept entertained somehow in their off-duty, and he'd just come out from London and he wasn't used to being on active service, so... I did go to see the colonel, but he just laughed and he said he didn't understand. I got away with that one. But, you did what there was to do, really. I had another friend there who was in charge of stocking the aircraft, airdrop it was called. He used to go with the aircraft and they used to drop supplies by parachute in the forward lines. He used to take me down to the airfield when we were off duty and show me, as you know, how they packed all the aircraft. And in one corner, there were a row of shoe boxes, which looked interesting, and there was a notice on them saying, luxuries for the troops. So I said, "Oh, that's nice, what's in there?" He said, "That's just for the press." He said, they're gym shoes inside. There are all those funny little incidents. I told you about the two Sikhs, did I? That was again an Imphal. We were being taken to work in the ambulance to the hospital early morning, and there was always a constant stream of traffic going both ways, you know, out of Imphal to India and into Burma. And the road was just packed, and we were crawling along, and ahead of us were two 5-ton trucks, one going one way and one the other. Suddenly everything halted with a bang, and irate colonels got out of their jeeps to see what had happened, and muttering, "Don't they know there's a war on? What's going on?" And what had happened was that one truck going one way and one going the other, as they passed, both Sikh drivers, they recognised each other. They were brothers and they hadn't met for years. And quite involuntarily, they simply stopped, jumped out, hugged each other with greetings of Sasrikal, is the northern Indian greeting. And everybody was fussing around, and they simply gave each other another hug, jumped in their trucks, and the war went on. It was nice little things like that happened.
Did you ever take more plane journeys?
Well, I can't remember where I was going, but we were on a plane with a lot of troops going somewhere. Unfortunately, they were all being very sick because they'd had a big breakfast. I learnt early on never to eat before I flew. I used to just have tea. I was sitting next to an officer, I think he was a colonel or a brigadier, and he had a brown cricket bag at his feet. And it seemed to me that the bag moved, and I kept looking at it, and he said, "Do you want to know what's in there?" So I said, "Yes, please." And he unzipped it, and out popped the heads of two dachshunds, who were very glad to have somebody pet them and talk to them. And he said he took them everywhere to war with him. Right on the front, he went in his cricket bag. And then we had 33 Corps were stationed not very far from, just on the outskirts of Imphal, where we had our hospital. They kept ducks. There were a lot of animals around in wartime. Yeah. People seemed to keep them. And if we go back to Tamu, we were asked if we would like to go down to Elephant Bill's camp, you know.
Who's Elephant Bill?
Elephant Bill, he's Williams. He's written a couple of books. He ran the elephant camps down in Burma, and they were used to haul loads and rescue people. They were wonderful. Don't know if you've read Russell's book about elephants, one particular elephant, when all the troops were walking out of Burma. She was at Maggie. She was absolutely wonderful. She carried the sick and helped them across the river, and she made the whole journey out. They couldn't have done it without her.
Did you go to Elephant Bill's camp?
Yes, we did. They were going down taking supplies, and they said, "Would we like to come?" I think somebody else came with me, I can't remember, but as usual, we travelled bouncing about in the back of trucks, and we got there and saw all these lovely beasts, and we were invited in to have lunch or tea, and they had a little pet monkey, and when we sat down to have our tea, she jumped on the shoulder, and she feel your face with her little leathery paws. She's rather funny.
You meet Elephant Bill?
I think so. I can't remember particularly. The camp was full of people, and I don't recollect him personally, no. I can't say I met him personally. I dare say he was there.
But this was a camp where he kept the animals.
Yes, he looked after them. They were used for moving. And, of course, that was an elephant area anyway, Tamu, you know, the logging. But that was a wonderful journey. As I say, it was like belonging to a very large family. We were extremely spoiled, really, because all the soldiers would take you around and look after you. And when I left the army, I felt a sense of desolation. So I'd lost a whole family. Because no matter where you were, if you were in trouble, they'd all come to your help, aid. And we had...
Where were you when the war in Europe ended?
Yeah, I was in Tamu.
Did it make much impact?
Oh, yes, it was great rejoicing. We dyed bandages in mercurochrome, which is that red stuff you put on wounds, and anything blue. We had red and blue streamers all over the camp, and Union Jack up, and there was great rejoicing.
Of course, your war was still ongoing, though, wasn't it?
As what?
Your war was still continuing.
Oh, yes, we were a bit sorry that our war was still going on. Just trying to think if there's anything else of note in Tamu, just the usual. I think I've told you the main things.
I think you went to Rangoon next, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, we then got posted to Rangoon. Can't remember, I think we were flown by RAF plane to Rangoon.
So it would have been liberated when you arrived? Rangoon would have been liberated?
It hadn't been quite when we got there, but I was there on VJ Day, We were put in the YWCA to start with. There was no particular hospital posting. And VJ Day came while we were there. It was very exciting. All the shipping in the river tooted and hooted, and sirens were everywhere, and people were rushing up and down the streets in jeeps, and there was money. I picked up a lot of Japanese money, which was thrown, and administration was just lying about in the streets. And we all dashed about, and somebody tried to drive a tank into Government House. And the Japanese were in there handing over the sword. I had that picture. I gave it to Dr. Liddell.
The Japanese surrender, this would have been,
yes,
would it?
Yes, surrender. It was, yes, at Government House, and what's his name was there? General Stopford was there. And it was he who gave me all these photographs. It was a hilarious time. Everybody was going about, and I had two Japanese notes with, and everybody around signed them. We all signed these notes. Again, I sent them to Peter Liddell. I didn't know about you then. I hope you use them correctly. Yes, it was very exciting. And then I got posted from. Oh no. I was sitting in the YWCA. I felt they'd forgotten about me because I hadn't got posted to any hospital. And a friend of mine who was in ordnance was going up to Kalor, to where I'd lived as a child, to see troops there. And he said, would you like to come? So I said, yes, I would indeed like to come and see. So I'm afraid I didn't ask anybody's permission. I just went. General Stopford was my commanding officer at the time. I told him about it years after the war. So I went with him. We had an orderly sitting in the back carrying a rifle because the Japs were still about, although the war was over. And we drove all the 300 miles up. I used to drive. We took it in turn. And when we got there, we went to an officer's sort of rest house, it was. And then his name was John. He took me to see our old house. I was rather sorry in a way. It had all been, they'd used burnt lit fires on the floor, and it was there, but it was all messed about. But and he took me to the Gurkha camp. It's very interesting. I found the old Gurkha lady who used to look after us. She was delighted to see me, and her son had gone to war. He was in the army. And we spent a couple of days there going around seeing all the old sites and places, and it was quite interesting to go back after so long. We only there for a couple of days, and we set off back down again. We took the jeep onto a flotilla boat, came down by river. Well, there's a lot of interesting things, but there isn't time to talk about little things. We got back to Rangoon, and the friend who used to do the airdrops, he was stationed then in the Arakan, and he flew in from the Arakan one day to see me, which was very nice, a long way. And Coralie, my friend, got posted to the Arakan. We got separated at last. She got posted back to the Arakan. I don't know why.
Where was your posting to be?
I was posted to Bassine, to a civilian hospital.
Where was that, Bassine?
Bassine, B-A-S-S-E-I-N. And it was on the River Salween. I've just been writing about this because we went by on an MTB, which is a motor torpedo boat. And I wrote to the Burma Star Association magazine to ask if anybody remembered that particular boat, because it was unusual. It had a small piano built into the mess room. And it was so small, everybody couldn't sleep at once. They had to take turns. Anyway, there were four of us, and we set off on this boat. It's also under dispute as to whether it was a motor torpedo boat or an ML, which is a motor launch. I'm just in the middle of corresponding with somebody to find out which it was. But it must be unusual to have a piano in a motor torpedo boat. The captain used to play. And we went up the river. There were dead Japanese floating down, and it was very eerie. And they couldn't have us to sleep on board because there wasn't room. So they went alongside a deck house, which is a rest house, sort of wooden building they had all along for people travelling. And we were taken ashore by the crew, our camp beds and our mosquito nets, where they set it all up. There was nothing in the house at all. It was very, they gave us our supper before we went. And it was very eerie. There were blood stains all over the floor, and I didn't sleep a wink that night. Anyway, we were glad when they came to collect us the next morning. And we continued on our way. Again, we were very well looked after. The captain of the boat offered me his cabin bed bunk. I said, when he had bed bugs, I soon came out. I slept on a coil of rope on the deck. When we got there, it was pretty awful, really. It was a sort of large building. We had to sleep upstairs, and the patients were downstairs.
This was a hospital, was it?
Yes, and they weren't army troops. They were sort of civilians as well. It was not really what we wanted to do. Anyway, the floors were so extraordinary. You peeped through cracks and you could see the patients from the floor. It wasn't very nice. But we had a Gurkha regiment stationed there, and I had a Gurkha friend who gave me a Gurkha cookery, which is now in the Gurkha Museum. And I think I was due some leave or something. I can't remember. Anyway, I wasn't there very long. Yes, I think I was due leave. That's right. They called me back. And the journey back was made on the ration boat. And the Gurkha officers, some of his men were travelling back to Rangoon. He gave them orders to look after us and see that we had food. They used to go ashore and get us eggs and things to eat. As we got back to Rangoon, it was late evening, and we were just coming into the harbour, and there was a jetty up above, and there was a jeep, and we saw the jeep coming along, and it simply drove right over and fell into the river. We never discovered what happened to it, because the boat moved on, but odd things like that stay in one's memory.
Did you ever see any of the returning prisoners of war of the Japanese?
No, not soldiers. In Burma. I know one in Chipping Norton very well. But
you didn't meet them in Burma?
No, not really.
Yes. So when did you actually leave the nursing service? How long did you stay?
I didn't stay long. I asked to leave because I'd volunteered. I said I was a volunteer, I was not a regular, and I'd like to leave as soon as they could let me go.
And when was that?
I did have a spell of leave when I went back to India, and I went up to Simla for a spell of leave, and I came back, and by that time my discharge had come through. Must have been in early 40. When did the war end? 45.
So it would have been 46, would it? 45. Early 46. The war ended in August, didn't it?
45.
So you would have finished soon after the end of the war.
Must have been the end of 45.
Right.
And then I, as I told you before, I went to stay with my aunt for a bit, and then I went to Bombay to stay with this cousin, Colonel Hennessy, who was in the Gurkhas and on specials. I think he was MI5. His wife is still alive. I keep asking her, but she was a Japanese prisoner of war and has left a mark on her. She's afraid to tell you anything. She says, don't mention that he was, but I'm pretty sure he was, because all these people used to come out and stay with him. They were very interesting meeting them all. I've even got some of their names. As I say, I sent the story to MI5 and they lost it. I've never got it back. And stupidly, I didn't keep a copy. But I do remember most of it. We had quite a good time there. I had to wait a long time for a boat to Kenya. That's what I was there for. And there was a passage for me on the Empress of Scotland. And a whole lot of East African troops were going back to Kenya as well. So when I got to Kenya, we then had the long journey from Mombasa to Nairobi, 300 miles, I think.
And then you met your parents. You were then with your parents?
Not yet. No, I was going to meet. They were up country. And when we arrived in Nairobi, we got a wonderful welcome. They had the red carpet out and the mayor and the Askari band, because there were returning East African troops as well. So, and it was after that my parents were up in Nakuru, and I went up to join them. It was wonderful to meet them again after all that time.